from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's all about words. It really is. Let's start with this. So you already know this. So let's start with what you know. It's a teacher's technique. We start with what you know, and then a federal judge has denied Fox News Channel's request for an injunction to block humorist, term of art, Al Franken's new book, whose title mocks the Fox slogan, mocks Fox, Fair and Balanced. U.S. District Judge Denny Chin said the book is a parody protected by the First Amendment. There are hard cases and there are easy cases, the judge said. This is an easy case. This case is wholly without merit, both factually and legally. The judge found it ironic that a media company which should be defending the First Amendment is, in fact, attacking it, ignoring the fact that Fox is the home of irony. When they declared the death of irony, they didn't have in mind the Fox News Channel or the entire Fox family. I'm a member of the Fox family, ladies and gentlemen, and it's an ironic family. We use the word ironically. But if Fox wants to sue somebody else and have possibly a better case than suing a, quote, humorist, maybe they should try suing the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, Dateline Washington. The board of directors of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting at its meeting unanimously reaffirmed its commitment to the principles of objectivity and balance in program content. Going a little further into the depths of this statement, they use the phrase here. Where is it? Oh, yeah. The Act recognizes the Public Broadcasting Act, says the statement from CPB, recognizes the need to treat subjects of a controversial nature in a fair and balanced way. Sue the Congress. Hey, Fox. Screw Al Franken. Sue the Congress. Get some real ink. If you want to silence, if Fox's goal, ladies and gentlemen, had been to silence Al Franken, of course, they wouldn't have sued him. They would have gotten him a job on MSNBC, where he would never have been heard from again. Like Jesse Ventura. You probably didn't. Unless you're one of the 250,000 people nationwide who watches MSNBC. Imagine, 250,000 people. That's the total audience for that network. And they get ink. Anyway, unless you're one of them, you probably didn't notice that Jesse Ventura will not, as previously announced, be doing a nightly broadcast, cable cast on MSNBC. He will be getting instead a weekly show, with two E's, on Saturday nights, the least watched television evening of the week. Go get him, Jesse. Parenthetically, the show that's been filling the time slot originally set aside for Jesse Ventura's show is the most watched show in MSNBC's prime time. The only one to gain viewers, and the only one they weren't promoting because it was a filler. Now they're promoting it, and the viewership has gone down. Swear. But just as a clue to the level of creativity in which Jesse found himself enmeshed, here's Eric Sorensen, head of MSNBC, talking about why the show didn't work as a Monday through Friday show, because they were trying a bunch of different formats. Quote, "We tried a million different things," says Eric Sorensen. "We tried with audience, without audience, with a sidekick, without a sidekick. We went the judge route. We tried game show meets reality meets talk show. We tried everything," unquote. Judge Jesse, ladies and gentlemen, I would have paid to see that. No truth to the rumor that NPR is trying a reality show, Queer Eyes for the Car Guys. But again, about words, ladies and gentlemen, you probably missed this. In an interview with Armed Forces Radio, given on Thursday of this week, President Bush interrupted the questioner when asked about his announcement May 1st of, as the journalist put it, the end of combat operations. Actually, major military operations, Bush replied, because we still have combat operations going on. It's a different kind of combat mission, but nevertheless, it's combat. In his speech on the USS Abraham Lincoln, which is being memorialized in a flight deck action figure of himself, Bush declared major combat operations in Iraq have ended. The headline on the White House website above Bush's May 1st speech is, President Bush announces combat operations have ended. No Bush speeches have spoken of guerrilla fighting as combat until the interview with Armed Forces Radio. A White House spokesman says Bush is not making a distinction between combat and military operations. So, yes, to speak presidentially, it all depends on what your definition of the word combat is. Hello, welcome to the show.
I'm
From the Crazy Grid of Desire, known as the French Quarter of New Orleans, Louisiana, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to yet and still another edition of Le Show. It is all about words today. From I forget who the last person we caught using this usage, to be absolutely redundant, to be repetitively redundant about it, on this broadcast was, but this is a twofer, because on Meet the Press this weekend, both Tim Russert and head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Richard Myers, bought into this one.
This is now more than just toppling Saddam Hussein. This has become the big Megillah in terms of defeating world terrorism.
Well, I think it's part of the war on terrorism. We've said that all along, and I don't know if it's the big Megillah.
I don't know if it's the big Megillah, because you mean the big enchilada. Megillah is not synonymous with enchilada, but of course, enchilada is, to borrow a hit song's usage, and big enchilada is so yesterday. Ladies and gentlemen, so they're trying to contemporize it by calling it the Big Megillah. But if you go Google, Megillah does not mean the big one or one. It means something else. I forget. Now news from outside the bubble. We used to call this news from the rear, but there is no front because combat operations are over, it depending on what we mean by combat. So because we live in a media bubble and different stuff gets said outside of it, news from outside the bubble. Poland. No, there's more to it than that. Poland has scaled back its military commitment in Iraq in response to the devastating attack this week on UN headquarters in Baghdad. That's right. Poland's response to the attack was to scale back. Under a hastily agreed new formula for the occupation, Polish troops will withdraw from a high-risk area near Baghdad. Well, you don't want troops in a high-risk area, ladies and gentlemen. Otherwise, they'll never be, you never get to be an action figure that way. This from Canadian sources. You guys have electricity up there? Good. 3 weeks ago, the Pentagon quietly announced it has suspended the space-based intercept component of the National Missile Defense Program due to technological difficulties. I didn't hear that. Here. In the August 1st edition of the Defense Daily, industry officials said that the Missile Defense Agency, MDA, not the Muscular Dystrophy Association, the Missile Defense Agency, same initials, I know, it's confusing, has decided the technology is not mature enough at this time. See, that's our problem, Bob. Our technology here in the studio is just not mature enough to work. However, industry officials said this move does not mean the space-based option is off the books entirely. Unquote. The suspension is a major setback in the quest to erect a missile shield. The suspension was announced shortly after the release of a damning study on national missile defense by the American Physical Society, the professional association for U.S. physicists. The authors focused only on the science and technological feasibility of the program. The authors found that none of the... Well, let's see. Go back one paragraph. The study concluded the most important component of national missile defense, boost phase defense. That's when the enemy rocket is first taking off, is moving slowly, is easiest to intercept, is not an effective approach to defending the United States. None of the boost phase defense concepts studied would be viable for the foreseeable future to defend the nation against even first-generation ICBMs, said the physicists. They arrived at these conclusions despite intentionally using optimistic assumptions, such as expecting that interceptors could be launched as soon as theoretically possible without leaving time for decision or assessment. Well, those are the same as assumptions used to say that Saddam Hussein could deploy weapons of mass destruction in 45 minutes. That didn't work either. Dateline Australia, Prime Minister John Howard's office sexed up its case for war by doctoring intelligence reports to remove doubts, qualifications, and ambiguity, a parliamentary inquiry has been told. In the first day of evidence, former Office of National Assessments senior analyst Andrew Wilkie accused the Australian government of fabricating evidence and deliberately deceiving the public to justify sending troops to Iraq. The Prime Minister angrily denied the accusation. If this sounds familiar, this is the same controversy that's going on in the English Parliament, following up BBC reports that the British government ordered the sexing up, to use their words, of a intelligence dossier last September to allege that Iraq was within capable of deploying weapons of mass destruction within 45 minutes. That led to the alleged suicide of Dr. David Kelly, who was the source of the BBC report. And that has led to the British government and Rupert Murdoch's newspapers launching an attack on the BBC. And there's a parliamentary inquiry and also a high-level independent inquiry underway. Here, of course, from the Congress, there's silence. So maybe in the division of coalition responsibilities, when the time comes to teach the Iraqis how to operate a vibrant democracy, we might let the Australians and the British take the lead there, and we can teach them how to run a vibrant film industry. And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the apologies of the week. Yes, it is.
We're so sorry.
It's a technology. It's just not mature. You see, that's what happened. It was the immature technology. Just so immature. The few, the proud, the sorry. A Marine who told Anoka County authorities, I guess that's Minnesota, that he was shot while trying to help a stranded motorist has admitted that he shot himself. Adam D. Welter of Andover was released Monday night from Mercy Hospital in Coon Rapids, where he was treated for a wound to his left shoulder. Welter reported he was shot early Monday after he stopped to help a man whose black rusted pickup truck was disabled. Investigators searched and found no evidence of a shooting. He was home on leave and had been scheduled to return to active duty this week. He called the sheriff's office this week on Tuesday, admitted making up the shooting story. Said Captain Bob Aldrich of the sheriff's office, "I think he felt bad and wanted to tell the truth. He was trying to do the right thing. He was awfully apologetic." Welter was apparently despondent about an impending long-term overseas military assignment. He'd been in training for about a year, and he was to be stationed in Hawaii. Well, a Marine who doesn't want to be stationed in Hawaii, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't heard this last name in a long time. After Carolyn Condit settled her lawsuit with the National Enquirer, neither side would reveal the details, including any financial compensation, but she received one thing for sure, an apology. A letter from the tabloid company's general counsel states the Enquirer, its sister publication, The Star, and parent company, American Media, sincerely apologize for the information in the articles that were published concerning you and regret the personal ramifications that followed. A plastics company in Ontario, Canada, apologized for a chemical spill Thursday and pledged to take steps to prevent it from happening again. Royal Polymers released nearly 300 kilograms. I don't know how much that is. We didn't go metric. I'm so glad. Of potentially cancer-causing vinyl chloride into the St. Clair River in two separate discharges after last Thursday's power outage disabled the plant's pollution monitoring equipment. Angry politicians and health officials weren't notified until Wednesday when an advisory was issued for thousands of residents who had to queue up with jugs for drinking water. Company officials said computer models indicate concentrations of the chemical never exceeded drinking water standards, but they said they were sorry the spill had occurred. Baylor University's former basketball coach apologized to one of the players he tried to enlist in a scheme to cover up alleged NCAA violations by accusing a slain player of dealing drugs, according to the... That's so confusing, I can't even get through it. A Democrat state legislator from SACO, Maine, angered Franco-American lawmakers Thursday. Franco-American lawmakers. When he said during a meeting with dozens of House Democrats at the Maine State House, quote, "I bought a car from this little dumb Frenchman once." Representative Christopher O'Neill later apologized for the remark, saying it was insensitive and he should have known better than to make it. He said he felt especially bad because his own father, who died several years ago, had a French-speaking mother who taught her son to speak French. O'Neill said afterward, the salesman describes himself the same way as a dumb little Frenchman. Franco-American lawmakers who heard the remark said they were surprised by it offended, but they accepted O'Neill's apology. And they don't think it was intended to be mean-spirited. It was just a loving, loving acknowledgement of a dumb little Frenchman. From the Sacramento Bee, on the August 7th, a story on the cover of the sports section about the Giants game at Pac Bell Park was filed by a Bee reporter who was not at the game. The reporter watched the game on television at a location away from the stadium. He filed the story without telling editors of the Bee his true location, leaving the impression he covered the game from the ballpark. In addition, it was discovered later that the story included quotes from other media outlets that were not attributed, and old, made to reporters on a previous occasion before the day of the game. The Bee regrets the situation and apologizes to its readers. A Philadelphia newspaper this week quoted Alabama Governor Bob Riley's policy director, David Stewart, as saying Riley's tax plan is behind in the polls because, quote, the people of Alabama are too stupid to know better. Riley's press secretary said if Dave made that remark, it certainly doesn't reflect the governor's feeling. Dave doesn't recall making that comment, and certainly doesn't recall making a comment like that to a reporter. First thing this morning when he heard about the story, he apologized to the governor, and he apologizes to any Alabamian who is stupid enough to be offended. No, he didn't say that. You know he didn't say that. The Australian Salvation Army apologized this week for abuse suffered by children in its care, some children under the care of the Salvation Army in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. Hey, let's move on. Have received financial compensation for abuse, which included cases of physical and sexual abuse. One man spoke of how he was punched to the side of his head and dragged to an office, while another man said he'd become a pedophile after being abused as a child. Salvation Army, ladies and gentlemen. President No Moo-hyun of South Korea expressed deep regret over the burning of North Korean flags during a recent conservative protest. It was inappropriate to burn the North's flags and effigies of Chairman Kim Jong-il. I hope this never happens again. The president ordered the Ministry of Unification to make appropriate actions to apologize. Japan, while we're in Asia, Japan apologized to China for an incident in which 29 people were poisoned by chemical weapons buried nearly 60 years ago. The Japanese government exceedingly regrets the poisoning incident and expresses its heartfelt sympathy, ladies and gentlemen. Please give heartfelt sympathy for the victims. And finally, comedian, I'm quoting again, this is from Fox News, and liberal activist Al Franken has written an apology letter to Attorney General John Ashcroft after asking him for his personal story about remaining abstinent before marriage. Franken admitted in a letter that he had deliberately tried to mislead Ashcroft when he sought personal information from him. In the letter, quotes, I indicated I wanted your story for a book about abstinence-only sex education entitled Savin' It. I claimed I'd already received testimonies from several conservative leaders, which I had not, Franken wrote. The letter was sent as part of a satirical book I'm working on, which will contain only one or two chapters dealing with abstinence-only sex education. He is sorry, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't done this for a while, so I think it is time for another copyrighted feature of this broadcast, if you'll be so kind as to indulge me. Tales of Airport Security. These are from listeners. Don't blame me, department. Dear Harry, last summer I injured my back and had to use a cane to walk. I was unable to support myself without it. The Northwest airline at Logan Airport in Boston seemed unusually quiet, and I thought the checkpoint would be no problem. As I was about to go through the metal detectors, the guard informed me that he would have to take my cane away and put it through the conveyor belt detector. I assumed they would return it to me once it had been screened. They refused to do so, stating it was policy not to allow screened items back into the unscreened area. I had to then make my way from the security desk table through the metal detectors over to the other side. Without the cane for assistance, I was in a great deal of pain, and I had to turn myself sideways to grasp the walls of the metal detector. I moved slowly and took 15 minutes to go from one side to the other. There was a gap of a few feet on the screen side where there was nothing to hang on to. I held up the line. The only reason I was able to complete the last few feet without the cane was I was assisted by my son, who ignored what the guards had told him, that he could not go back or give me the cane. I was sweating profusely, in pain, and embarrassed by this turn of events. As I finally took my cane from the metal detector and started to walk away, one of the guards looked at me and said, "Have a nice day." Dear Harry, while returning today from a trip to Indianapolis, I performed the usual ritual of placing all my metal objects into the little dish to be x-rayed, separately placing my laptop in its own container, and laying my bag flat on the conveyor belt, please. I did, however, leave one potentially deadly item in my pocket just before going through the metal detector. The TSA agent looked at me urgently and said, "Stop, what is that in your pocket?" "A bottle of water," I said. I pulled the plastic bottle of water out for his inspection. It was a normal Poland Spring 16-ounce bottle of water, the kind that's made entirely of clear plastic. "Well," he said, looking right at the bottle, "it will have to be x-rayed." "Really?" "Yes." He seemed very serious about this, so I obediently placed the bottle of water in its own separate bin and put it on the conveyor belt. Fortunately, there were no dangerous objects hidden in my unopened clear bottle of water, so I was able to make my plane. Regards, Bill. It all depends on what your definition of the word combat is, ladies and gentlemen. Tales of Airport Security, copyrighted feature of this broadcast. We're just chock full of copyrighted features here today on the show because now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for me to read the trades for you. Almost as if I'm trying to keep my own copyright lawyer busy. If I had one. Fox has one. Maybe I'll borrow theirs. You know, we're family. Anyway, from... MeetPoultry.com. First of all, today, I'll read this for you. Even though it's on print. Old Homestead Steakhouse, the centuries-old New York institution in the heart of the city's meatpacking district, has recently made a killing and plenty of headlines with its $41 Kobe beef burger, and the menu's about to get even pricier. In an announcement this past month, officials with the restaurant say it is rolling out a Kobe beef hot dog. $19. The Homestead version weighs in at 11 ounces and stretches more than a foot long and 2 inches wide. The dog will be served on a brioche Frankfurter roll with a choice of three toppings: Kobe beef chili, Vidalia onions and Holland bell peppers, or Cheshire cheddar sauce. Say that real fast three times. Cheshire cheddar sauce. And when the trial starts, I look for Kobe beef dogs everywhere, even if they're lying. But another trade, ladies and gentlemen, from Current, the trade publication of Public Broadcasting. NPR hopes to boost online revenue with the most unavoidable and intrusive form of paid promotion it has tried on the World Wide Web. Users of Microsoft browsing and audio software seeking an audio file at NPR.org in a test that ended last month first heard a 12-second underwriting credit for the Wall Street Journal, accompanied by a graphic for the newspaper. The spots ended when the underwriting contract was satisfied, says NPR's spokeswoman Jessamine Sarmiento. But the network plans to sell more spots of the same type and send them to users of Real Networks players as well. The spots were inserted before every audio segment and could not be skipped. NPR is testing ways to prevent visitors from hearing them more than once. NPR's site once sold only small visual underwriting announcements, such as an AARP logo on Morning Edition's page. Online costs have been rising, however, and NPR's internet division feels pressured to increase income, says Maria Thomas, vice president of online. Public radio sites have played down online underwriting, at least when compared to commercial sites. Studies of public radio listeners' online habits have advised against using promotions that are difficult to bypass, like pop-up windows and banner ads. Stations have mostly followed suit, but NPR's audio credits are an exception. There is no way this can be less than annoying to anyone, says Eric Newsom, director of programming and operations for WKSU in Kent, Ohio. Radio listeners may be mildly annoyed by on-air underwriting, Newsom says, but they usually listen passively while driving, cooking, or engaging in other activities. Hey, how are the other activities going right now, ladies and gentlemen? People listening to audio on a website, however, are active and more likely to be impatient, he said. The annoyance factor of that announcement is probably higher because you're making someone wait. Says John Greenberg, executive editor at New Hampshire Public Radio, what's being inserted clearly has a commercial feel to it. Says Tim Rosler of Minnesota Public Radio, I think users have come to expect underwriting or advertising on the web. I doubt if it was too shocking. NPR says the journal Spots drew just one complaint. Evidence you may be too passive, ladies and gentlemen, you be the judge when I read the trades for you, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Thank you so much, although you're not clapping for me. Ladies and gentlemen, the situation in Iraq got more interesting this week. Hey, thank you. I am the master of understatement. A fearsome truck bomb killed the head of the United Nations humanitarian mission over there. The World Bank and the International Monetary Fund pulled out. The United States responded by sending Colin Powell to the United Nations to discuss the possibility of a new UN resolution, which would back other countries which have so far disdained, rejected, rebuffed U.S. entreaties to send troops to internationalize, to further internationalize, joining the Eritreans and the Solomon Islanders in our coalition, to further internationalize the military presence in Iraq. France, Germany, figures. India, Pakistan, Turkey have all rebuffed U.S. advances, to put it romantically. The sticking point at the United Nations seems to be that the United Nations, or some international something, have some say over what's done with the troops. The U.S. says, so far, no. Paul Bremer, the civilian head of the U.S. operation in Iraq, was all over the Sunday Yak Show saying, well, we'd like more troops, but we don't need more troops, because if we get more troops, we're going to send some of our troops home. John McCain and other senators who've been over there say, echoing the former Army Chief of Staff, who was hustled out in May for saying this, no, we need more troops. We need like 300,000 troops. So, meantime, as they say on the news broadcast, President Bush trying to change the subject toward the West, emphasizing his buffing his environmental credentials at appearances in Oregon. And, incidentally, did some fundraising. Sure. Well, you got to do that. But as for this other situation, I don't know. Maybe a phone call is in the offing from a son to a father next here on Le Show.
Just give me the five iron. Yellow.
Hey, 4-1, what, a catch in the golf course?
Yeah.
What's the matter, fish ain't biting?
No, they were biting fine this morning. Now it's the afternoon.
Yeah.
How you doing, 43? You sound, don't know, a little head up.
No. Just a lot of traveling, but hey, who was it? J.P. Morgan said you have to go where the money is.
I think it was Willie Sutton.
Yeah, well, one of our banking friends.
Yeah.
Listen, can't complain about the fundraising. When you do what the people want, the people show their gratitude. And ain't no law can outlaw that.
Yeah, felt kind of the same way 18 months before my re-election didn't happen. But, of course, as you have been kind enough to inform me more than once, your whole mission was to learn from the mistakes of your father. So,
oh, hey, sir, if I ever said that, and I did,
yeah,
it was said out of an abundance of love and respect,
mm-hmm,
and not out of any sense that you'd remember it at a later date.
But, and know that you don't look at polling figures,
mm-hmm,
but you've seen the polling figures.
I have, and it just strengthens my resolve not to. But seriously, Carl and I aren't concerned about that. Yet, we're concerned about my legacy as a strong leader, you know, and I happen to believe that no man stands so tall as when he stoops to ask for help from his father.
In a foursome here.
But you know, we're so close to achieving our vision of a transformed Middle East. You know, all that's standing in the way is what Dick Cheney calls the soft bigotry of Muslim anti-Americanism.
Looking kind of hard.
Try a four.
No, mean the bigotry is looking kind of hard.
Yeah.
Look, Sprout, not a big intel nugget. You need more troops, more boots on the sand, more helmets in the sun, more...
I got it, which is why I'm calling you, 41. Everybody, Karl Rove, Dick Cheney, Don Rumsfeld, Karl Rove, everybody's telling me we need to internationalize the security component.
You're out of troops.
Well, there is that,
mm-hmm,
but, you know, until we can put an Iraqi face on this operation, we need to put a Turkish or Pakistani, or at least a German face on it.
Sorry, a little slow on the uptake. You know, summer heat. You want me, a former ambassador to the UN, to to help us make the UN relevant again. I mean, you know, Colin went down there this week.
Well, if anybody can turn that thing around, Colin can do it. He's a fine diplomat.
Well, I know you think so, but yeah. He's playing the I-told-you-so card already, saying no way we're going to get a new resolution unless we share control of the enhanced coalition.
Well, he's right. I mean, what president in his right mind is going to put his country's kids in harm's way and not have some input into command and control?
I know that's the conventional wisdom, but this isn't a conventional war. This is something we got to run. What we're looking for is good old traditional silent partners, Midland Oil Company style.
Well, still know some people, huh? Uh-huh. Though not as many as last year at this time.
See, I think Carl feels this way, although he's too much of a professional to say it. I know I feel that some of your old contacts in Pakistan are still in positions where they could play a positive role in resolving this.
They still pose a threat, yeah?
Well, you know, use it or lose it. I mean, I could really use your help right now, 41. You know, I couldn't say something like that before my life changed, but I can now, and I will.
Never wanted to say anything critical about the policy.
Oh, and you've been great about that. I so appreciate the respect you've shown.
Never wanted to be accused of weakening my own son's backbone by people who would say that kind of thing.
Well, so...
But never thought that 50 years' worth of multilateralism would go down the poop chute without a peep. You know, it's not really what you want to be complaining about, that the Germans are refusing to follow orders.
Look here, 41, I know you're yanking my chain on this, and maybe I got a little bit coming, but if I can't start bringing most of the American boys and girls home from Iraq by the time of our convention, we're looking at President Dean.
Sounds like something Jerry Lewis would say.
Yeah.
A little ironic. You were saying to the rest of the world, out of my way, let me at the enemy. Now, that's what the enemy is saying.
So look, I don't want to take up any more of your game. Yeah. What do you think?
Well,
come on. You're not going to let your petulation over my supposedly abandoning your beloved international framework, you're not going to let that get in the way of our continuatable ability to work for all the people, one company at a time? I'm begging you here.
Let me make a few calls, see what's possible.
Yeah, not a lot of time. We're in danger of losing the momentum we're gaining.
Okay. Bye tonight.
You know something, 41?
Hmm?
You're the best ex-president dad a guy could ever have. I couldn't say that to you before I changed my life.
I know. Talk to you.
Say thanks to Mom, too.
You got it. Okay, sorry, guys.
Let it be. I've got an eye for distinction and a brand new guarantee. And you don't know it, but you belong to me. Have a holiday, yeah. Just sit back, relax a bit, and let this big strong girl scare those other fools away. But you know that I won't give up the fight. So come on, dance with me, darling, till we see the first day's light. A sneaking suspicion you won't go home tonight. Don't you know, darling, I got a sneaking suspicion you won't go home. You won't go home tonight, darling, you won't. I've got a sneaking suspicion, darling.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. There's more news about public broadcasting, but I have to save it for next week. You'll like it. Tune in. But that is this week's edition of the show. The program does return next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the American Forces Network, on the east coast of North America, on the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz. Across North America on Sirius Satellite Radio, and around the world via the Internet at two locations, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. And if you join me, it would be just like knowing what combat really means, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. My thanks to Bob Dunn here at WWL-TV in New Orleans, to John and the gang at Piety Street Studios in New Orleans, the Studio of the Stars, to the Pittsburgh desk, the San Diego desk, and to Will Lewis at KCRW for assistance in making today's show last almost an hour. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at innerworld.net. The show internet services by Steve Mack. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of SAS, a satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. So long from New Orleans.